Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, look who's here.
See how that's timing.
Look who's
it's an
here.
Entrance.
That's a broadcaster. That's a professional. Ladies and gentlemen, Len Casper joining us here on our stage as we try to rope in the people in line to get the Hall of Famers. Don't I feel small? Welcome.
Great to be here, Steve. How are you?
Good to see you, Len.
We're doing good. Thank you for joining us.
I listen a lot, and I don't know if I've ever been on your show. Have I?
No, not Saturday Suckage. You've had more sense than that.
Okay. No, he has.
To be in a building, and they roped you in, and the energy.
Yeah, I wasn't asked about this one. This was on my list. No, I would have done it. I would have done it, of course.
I recall us having an on-the-air discussion about Tears for Fears. Everybody wants to rule the world at some point. Your walk-up music, I believe, we asked you.
It's great.
And that was your selected walk-up music.
Yeah, just it's my era and just puts me in that happy place, you know. I think life is lived as like a 12 to 13-year-old. Everything that was good then kind of remains better than everything the rest of your life. That's why I'm a big uniform guy, and that's kind of a big Twitter thing I go off on is uniforms. And like when NHL teams wear vintage unis from like 1984, I'm like, that should be the uniform they wear forever.
The uniforms NHL teams should wear should all have the ties.
Yeah,
that
those are nice.
That was the coolest thing
those are nice.
Ever. So the 80s was your sweet spot for
just
uniforms.
About everything.
So, because a lot of people my age will say they never wanted to wear the Astros starburst, but they always remembered it, much like in the 80s they remember the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, the big V uniforms, yeah.
So what was your uniform of the 80s?
I have so many. I mean, I would just say I'm going to answer that in a general way. I like the three stripes NFL uniforms. The Bears have it with the blue and the orange on the pants. The Lions used to have it. They don't have it anymore. The Saints have that stripe on their helmet, but they don't have it on the pants, and it bothers me. The Cowboys,
you like
the 49ers.
In your uniforms?
Yeah, there's something cool about that look with like the thick red stripes with the white stripe in the middle on the gold pants of the 49ers. I just think that really pops out.
So we were talking,
but we're here to talk baseball, right?
No, we're here. We're here to talk whatever.
We're spraying all fields today.
Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
The Cubs convention began with again Theo. There was sort of an air of accountability, an air of understanding of we didn't do anything. And I went back to Mike was just talking about that we did a show last year after the auto show. We get out of the car, we're done with the show, and Cubs signed Yu Darvish. And I went and wrote on that, and I remember writing, this is the team that just won the World Series. Oops, babe. All right, that didn't age well. But with what happened last year, 95 wins, spider, and you go back and let's presuming everything's going to be healthy. And even if they're not, Theo rallies better than anybody during a season that I've seen. So last year's team needs to win this year's World Series, the way I look at it. So I'm better. I'm not angry in a rare spasm of calm. Do you look at it that way, or how are you viewing what's gone on?
I just think 2018 was incredibly fascinating. It was very frustrating. There's so much nuance here. When Theo and the panel I just did with him talked about it, it was all of it. There were so many good things, the 95 wins, blah, 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 but you're left with this emptiness of the last 3 days. And the last two in particular, where the Brewers celebrate on your field, and then the next night the Rockies do. And where do you go from there? And in a vacuum, if that had been 2015, totally different, right? Wow, they overachieved, young club, they got to the wild card game. This is the start of something. But coming 2 years after a World Series title and after three consecutive NLCS trips, to have it end with a thud. And the Cubs went, I think, 16-12 in September. It was really more about how well the Brewers played. But as Theo said, when you felt like the season came down to 90 feet, there was like one swing of the bat. If you could have won one game before the Monday or won the game Tuesday night with a big hit in the wild card game, now you're guaranteed to play for at least another week. He said that's winning is a deodorant. You can cover up all the things. So when you win the World Series, you don't nitpick all the things that didn't go right. And he goes, when your season comes down to 90 feet, that's the perfect time to nitpick because one little thing could have changed everything. So sometimes that's the way the ball bounces. I think Theo has chosen to view it this way. Let's do everything in our power to work on the margins and make sure that next year we get that extra 90 feet. We find a way to get into the next round however we do it.
It was very Bears-esque. I mean, the Bears' finish was much the same. I think fans expected to continue, right? I mean, this was a team. You followed every step of the way. They exceeded expectations. Probably should have won the game. You had the kick thing and everything else. But with the Cubs, you had the Bryan injury, and he was never really himself. The Darvish stuff with the injury, Chatwood. I mean, all of the various moves that you thought would improve you. And I know we were both, as Steve just said, the day they signed Darvish, we were on the air. That was like, holy cow, that's right. You know, this is a great signing. And I did see his comments from yesterday where he said he's feeling night and day from last year. He's going to start throwing again. He should be full go by beginning of the season and for spring training. In your baseball mind, keeping all of the injury stuff out of it, do you think that this is going to be – is he going to be able to start and just be a part of this rotation without limitations?
I have no idea. My hunch would be no, not early. I think it is going to be a process, and I think the difference between last year and this year in regards to you, Darvish, is last year you're counting on 30 starts, top three guy in your rotation, dominate people at every turn. This year, I think you go in very cautiously, and you make sure you're covered if it doesn't go well, and you hope that he gets back and is healthy. That's the first thing, right, is you got to make sure the guy is completely healthy. Then you can start to count on production. But I don't think the Cubs look at it that he'll be in the opening day rotation and going to take the ball and throw 110 pitches on March 31st. If there is a March 31st. Is there a March 31st?
I don't know, but there is.
March,
if he's going to throw 110 pitches,
it would
will
be March,
create a day.
March 32nd, yes.
That's right.
To answer your question, hopefully, but I think you with Morrow and Darvish, I think you just, whenever they're back, they're back.
We're talking with Len Casper, Cubs broadcaster, and we are at the Cubs convention at the Sheraton Grand. Convention coverage sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I root for...
I have been on before, I've been told.
You have?
Yes, I'm looking at the computer. Len has been on before.
I do remember, we did have a conversation because you remember we were letting everyone do their walk-up music, and I do remember our Tears for Fears conversation. That was it. That's what sticks out to me, yes.
Must have been memorable.
Well, at least nobody held it against you.
Right, exactly. So you invited me back.
I root for stories. I always did root for stories, but it was an occupational hazard. And I really thought, and I want to get, how do you balance rooting for a story when you see Jason Hayward hit that grand slam against Philly. David Bote, the grand slam. I mean, that's down three, the ultimate kind of grand slam.
Right.
Which might have been the last time the Cubs got a clutch hit.
Right.
In that seat. But,
right.
But I root for stories, and I look at that kind of narrative. You have to balance that, and metrics bring you back to that. Do you fall into that? Do you protect yourself from falling into that? Because I think it's really romantic.
Narratives in baseball in particular, it's everything. And I think the more I've done this, the less I blend in terms of the sabermetric stuff. I think there was a period of time, maybe early after Theo took over, when the Cubs weren't very good. We had a lot of time to talk about this stuff.
Yeah,
but it was a little bit more of
like from opening
educating
day.
All of us. And I would say educating myself, not as much as the fans, but just on the numbers that matter. But I think now, in terms of stats and how teams go about their business, if you can blend that into a narrative, I think it goes over much better in a broadcast. And, you know, that's how Vince Scully always did it, right? He told stories. So for me, I'm always looking for a good story, no question about it. Yep.
The free agency period, which is still going on, and we'll see how it winds up. Certainly the big names still out there with Bryce and Manny Machado still out there. But we heard some of the players comment on it yesterday just about the way it's changed from how it had worked in the past, and specific to several things. One, the longer term in terms of years deals. And number two, just the premium. And I mean, we see the Yankees, it seems like they signed a relief pitcher every other day. They've got a stacked bullpen, a lot of guys they've added there. In your mind, is this just a changing of how executives are looking to put teams together and what they're willing to commit? You know, are they going to say, hey, 10-year contracts, why would we do that anymore? Is that something that's here to stay in your mind?
Well, it does go in cycles, and you tend to have this glacial movement in the game where you see subtle changes, and then all of a sudden everybody starts to kind of view it similarly. And the last two off seasons have been really weird in that a lot of great free agents have had to sit around and wait until spring training, or in some cases even into April. It used to be, as Theo said, again, in the panel we just did, You go into an offseason, you go, we need a shortstop, we need a left-handed setup guy, and we need a backup outfielder. And you went out and you signed those three guys, or you traded for them, and you were done. And it sometimes didn't matter how much money or how many years. Well, now it's just such a science that I think you can plug a lot of stuff into a computer, and it comes back, don't pay more than this amount, right? And I think they stick...
They're
very
different colors. Yeah. It pops up in different colors.
They stick very close to that.
It's like blood tests.
Right. And then every once in a while you roll the dice and you go, you know what? John Lester, we're going to give him 6 years. We hope his arm holds up, but we feel that this is the right thing at the right time for this franchise. And it's turned into, thankfully, arguably the greatest free agent signing in the history of the Cubs. Mm-hmm. And one of the greatest in Chicago sports history, considering the outcome 2 years after he signed. So... Yu Darvish, Tyler Chatwood, first year, it didn't work out. Thankfully, they'll have their chance to get it back to where the Cubs thought they would be when they signed them. But it's a science that doesn't often produce the results that you want, unfortunately. But that's the beauty of sports. You never know.
Right.
You never know.
And I think I think Theo once famously was quoting Tom Cruise in Risky Business. I can't say the line here, but sometimes, Joel, you just got to say what the...
Right.
And there, some of the signings in Boston were like that. Theo went through this in Boston. Theo and Jed. 2004. Break the curse, right? At long last. 5, disappointing. 6, disappointing. We're following that. We're watching him relive that. And now here you are the fourth year. They won it in 07, does he talk about that? Has he drawn any parallels as you heard? I've not heard him do that.
I have not. And really, after he left, didn't they go first to last to first? The Bobby Valentine year, they finished last.
Right.
So if you're a Cub fan, think about what the Red Sox fans went through, right? They had that.
Quite the roller coaster.
I mean, literally went to last place and then came back and won the World Series. So the Cubs, if you bottom out at 95, you feel a heck of a lot better, but... I'm just adding some perspective to it is all. Because, yeah, some other teams have to go way down to come back up, and you hope that that doesn't happen in this case.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Single-game tickets are available for Penn State, Rutgers in Minnesota, and Ohio State. Buy now at nusports.com. And Len, that's exactly, as a lifelong born-and-raised Cubs fan, what I try to keep in mind as I'm gauging success and failure of a season is that the last 4 seasons, I mean, this is the greatest stretch of Cubs baseball I've ever seen in my life, and I know most of our Cubs fans have seen in their lives. So while I'm upset they didn't go further last season, I cannot be upset necessarily with a 95-win first-place team. I mean, that just is not something that I can be that down about, especially when we've seen this same group play as well as they have in the past.
Yeah, I think that's right, Mike. And, you know, traveling with a team every day, it's almost like you have two parts of your brain, because I think the big picture, you hit it right on the head, but I think the small picture is you should have been really upset after the Cubs petered out basically at the end. They were upset. The fans should have been upset. it felt at that moment like it was a total, utter failure. But when you travel with a team, and this is hard for what Steve, you did for decades, is try to write these big picture narratives based on the last 3 hours or the last 3 days. when now we sit here in January and you look back at something that happened last April.
And they all haunt you.
Right. It didn't matter, right?
No, it didn't.
Like some awful game or some great game. And the big picture doesn't matter. And when you travel with a team, you learn that very quickly. With Zach Zaidman, who had been with the Bears for so long, that was a big adjustment for him. It's like, we got a game tomorrow.
Yes.
Not next Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to spend the next week doing this.
Picking it apart.
We have a game tomorrow.
Parsing it. Yeah.
So players, and I think people who travel with a team, the day-to-day stuff really doesn't affect you like it does a fan. But it's the end of the season where the players, like Theo talked about, there were guys crying in the clubhouse. They were really ticked off. They were angry. They were shocked. I think it would have been fascinating to have a camera in there and to really see just how devastated those players were when all of a sudden their season was over. I think that whole season of trying to remain even kind of builds up to that moment, and it's either elation or total dejection.
I covered teams that have gone through something similar, and my feeling was, and looking back now, the macro view is players take that day-to-day approach. There's another game.
Yeah.
And they're kind of hiding whatever doubt they have because there's another game.
Right.
But when there's not another game, it all comes out. They've been building up. They've been sitting on it. They would not let it show because there was another game, another chance. And that's what happens at the end. I used to say a hockey season was never official until I saw a Sutter cry in the playoffs.
Right.
It wasn't officially over, and then one of them was always crying. But they would be the stiffest of lips because that's the way that family was in that sport. And I think the Cubs went through that.
Yeah, I think they did.
Let me ask you something, since I'm unfamiliar with all of the oeuvre that is Tommy Hottovy. What can you share with us?
We're really smart, really connects well with the players, has a very close relationship with Joe. Every day when Ron Coomer and I and if JD wants to pop in or Pat, we meet with Joe. Invariably, Tommy would walk in with Joe's cheat sheet. That will not be Tommy's job anymore, but it was basically how to set up hitters on the other team, what changes to make in terms of pinch hit here or there. So he was really strategically very important. I think a lot of that will continue. Very confident guy. I love the idea of promoting from within. Usually when changes like this are made with a position that's really important, like pitching coach, you go out and you get somebody who has experience from some other place. But I think there were other teams who wanted Tommy as their pitching coach, and I think it's just a great sign that they were able to promote from within. I think it's a really good thing organizationally.
And we've heard, Joe, as we enter spring training a few weeks from now, I imagine you'll be heading down to Arizona and the Cubs will be down there. Joe's contract is up after the season. He says, not even a thing, don't worry about it. He's confident in everything. Is your biggest storyline heading into Arizona, is it health for this team?
The biggest storyline, yeah, probably. I think we want to see how Chris Bryant reacts with the shoulder.
That's the off-season signing.
There's your big Chris Bryant.
There's
and
your off-season signing.
And Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood, if they come in and produce as expected last year, then that is. I mean, it's the old cliche, right, that, you know, the injured guy comes back and, well, hey, there's your free agent.
Trade.
Okay.
Yeah, health probably is the big question because right now, as we sit here again a month before the game start, there aren't a lot of decisions to be made. We kind of know the rotation. Mm-hmm. We basically know the starting lineup. We basically know what the bullpen's going to look like. There'll be some tweaks here or there, but it's pretty set.
Before we dismiss the starting lineup, before we let you go, do we have enough information post Dexter Fowler about the value of a leadoff guy for Joe's team? I'm not looking to I'm not looking to put blood in anyone's urine. I'm just simply bringing it up because it had been a point of contention, and I don't know if we have enough time or distance or if there are metrics that tell us that this is a terrible spot for the Cubs. They're better off with one guy. That one guy happened to be terrific. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you where I sit. Just look at the overall number at the end of the year, and I don't think it really matters how many guys do it. If you have a leadoff on-base percentage of 360, it's good. Whether that's a combination of Rizzo, Happ, Zobrist, Descalzo, Schwarber, Baez.
Best leadoff hitter Moore, in history, right. Anthony Rizzo. There he is.
That's the way I look at it, Steve. I don't know that I'm right.
No, but I
do think when you look at when the Cubs won the World Series, they had one guy who did it all year.
Right.
He was really good at it.
I
can't answer that.
That's a championship bias. But you want to follow championship teams. That's why I bring that up. Hap was 353. By the way, talk about the narrative. He hits the first pitch of last season for a home run. I mean, that starts my narrative. I go, oh, no.
Was Hap's on base as a leadoff hitter 353?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You'll take that, right?
Well, was it? I wrote it down, 353 is on base percentage. And I have to go back and clarify whether it was on leadoff or overall. But still
it's good.
You're getting that kind of production from him. Joe's always believed in him. Joe's liked that combination, power.
It's very athletic.
Bat, yes. Speed and whatever he could do. And he believes in him. And I thought Kyle Schwarber was a much better player, much better at taking walks after he came back from the minors.
I'll tell you what. Here's a good one for you. I think it was... After the World Series, so it was the Cubs convention 2 years ago. This puts it in perspective. I was talking to Ian yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Cubs' first-round pick in 2015. So he said, basically, I'm kind of the and fans were really into the big picks and the big prospects. The Cubs called him and said, we don't need you at the convention. We just won the World Series. This is 2 years ago. So he was on the radar.
He's got a bigger name on the other line.
He was on the radar in terms of, you know, fans knew the name.
Right.
But he was not a big leaguer 2 years ago, and they were like, we don't need you here. We've got enough. And he was like, okay, fine. But, like, he showed up that year in 2017. He's just getting started.
I understand.
He's
and
a
Joe's
baby.
Believed
he
in
really
him.
Is.
Joe's believed in him a lot.
And Theo, I know a season ago, Bruce and I had Theo on Inside the Clubhouse, and we asked him, who do you give us a breakout candidate for the year? And he mentioned Ian Happ. That was the first guy that he said. And then he did. He hit the first pitch out for a home run. And it's like, hey, the guy knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
All right, Len, we really appreciate you.
My pleasure.
By. This was a lot of fun.
Enjoyed it.
So thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Rosie.
Len Casper.
Thank you, Len.
Mike. Cubs broadcaster.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.